The other problem with God is spirituality that Dan Brown advocates is that it has no understanding. Because the goddess is everything, including you, there is no understanding of right and wrong, good and evil. There is no foundation for justice, because there is nothing transcendent that is not us. There is no God who is a personal being who can decide what is right and wrong, who his very nature determines what is right and wrong, who can sit in judgment on evil. Here is Starhawk, this Wiccan feminist writer, saying, "Evil is a construct, an invention, pagans try to avoid. Our theology, or rather theology, let's make theo, male ending, into thea, female ending, our theology, goddess knowing, teaches us that dark and light, life and death, creation and destruction exist in balance." She couldn't quite bring herself to say good and evil exist in balance, although she has said evil is a construct pagans try to avoid. That comes from an article where she's talking about how do pagans respond to global acts of terrorism, like 9/11. It was written in the wake of 9/11. And her ultimate conclusion is that the best that a pagan can do is say, it's not a very nice way to behave, is it? Christianity, by contrast, actually, for all that Dan Brown says, and for all the mistakes the church has made over the years, has a very high view of women. In reality, Dan Brown, this quote comes from not a Christian source at all. This is the Rough Guide to the Da Vinci Code by two people who are not Christians, but it's a pretty balanced look at the history behind it. It's theologically, I don't agree with a number of the theological conclusions it draws, but it's a fairly balanced book. But what they say about the history of the Christian church is this: in reality, Christianity was a largely liberating influence on women's lives. For the everyday truth about women in pagan societies was that their worth was judged almost exclusively on their success as sexual and reproductive beings. This gave women importance and authority within the domestic sphere, but it was Christianity which opened up horizons of new promise, and women were not behind in seeking out established roles. Absolutely right. The history of the Christian church actually has been a history of women being suppressed and denied, but also have been given liberating opportunities. The example, the biblical example, is Jesus himself, who valued women like nobody else in his culture. They were a part of his following. Luke tells us in Luke chapter 8 that women were helping to support Jesus out of their own means. The first witnesses to the resurrection were women, and that in a culture where the legal testimony of women wasn't accepted. Jesus treated them as equals and had a very high respect for women. And when the church has deviated from that down through history, that is a deviation from the example of Jesus and is not embracing the right way of behaving. So Dan Brown is advocating this spirituality, this feminine-based spirituality. But actually, the very spirituality that is so popular, I'm saying, is deeply flawed. Because goddess spirituality doesn't account for evil. It doesn't deal with that real sense of guilt that we feel. It is based on a story that has no historical foundations. And it doesn't require anything of us other than to be self-aware. And in contrast, the Christian story, the Christian gospel, is a message of God actually stepping into our world, making his home, if you like, in the womb of a woman for 9 months, to be brought up by a woman as a baby, to be nurtured and fed, trained by her, in order to grow up and to be a man where he claims to do, where he did do extraordinary things, and he claimed to be God in human form. He set out to die. He deliberately went to his death, saying that this and only this was the means by which people could be saved. And here, in the Christian story, is the possibility of us not becoming at peace with ourselves and recognising that everything is this wishy-washy spirituality. But we can be at peace with God, the creator of everything, and the judge, the one who can determine what is right and wrong, and who says one day human history will be wrapped up, and all of the evil that we have done will be called to account. And yet, through the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, we can be put right with him. Seems to me that's a much more exciting story that Dan Brown twists and misrepresents And that's to the loss of all of us, I think. Though I'm all for the debate. It probably would help, just given the acoustics of the place, if you could maybe stand or at least really raise your voice so that other people can hear. Or maybe I should repeat back the question so you can all hear. But I've avoided a lot of the obvious kind of controversies around it, really, by focusing on what I think is the central issue. So I mean, maybe you want to pick up some of those other controversies and talk about that for a little while. Yes?
Where does he get his evidence that Jesus and Mary had a child?
Where does Dan Brown get his evidence that Jesus and Mary had a child, or even that Jesus and Mary were married, to start with? It's a very good question, largely from Margaret Starbird, with this book she wrote, The Woman with the Alabaster Jar, which is Mary Magdalene. And the book is a story of how Jesus and Mary were married and had a child called Sarah. Mary Magdalene, after Jesus was crucified, went with Sarah to live in France and grew up there. Her descendants became the Merovingian kings and so on. And so he's picked it up from Margaret Starbird. He's also got quite a lot of it from a book by Michael Bagent, Richard Lee and Henry Lincoln, called The Holy Blood and the Holy Grail. You may have noticed there was a court case just recently about this. Might possibly have registered on your radar. Where two of the authors of that book sued Dan Brown for plagiarism, saying he pitched their ideas. Well, the ideas weren't original to them either, though they'd invented quite a lot. And he's also taken stuff from a book by two writers, Lynn Picknett and Clive Prince, called The Templar Revelation. So those are his primary sources where he's picked this idea up. Incidentally, if you do go and see the film, watch out for the scene on the bus. There are two curious-looking characters sitting behind Robert Langdon and Sophie Nouveau on the top of the bus, and those people are Clive Prince and Lynn Picknett, who wrote The Templar Revelation. And they've just got this little cameo kind of sitting trying to look normal on the bus, which is quite funny, really. And now, a little aside like that. Oh, yes, that's right. So those are the three books that he bases his story on. Now, Margaret Starbird has very little evidence for this story. There is no biblical evidence that Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene. There are 12 references to Mary in the Gospels, the biblical Gospels, the New Testament Gospels as we have them, 11 of which relate to the crucifixion and resurrection. And one of which is Luke talking about these women who were travelling around with Jesus, helping to support him, and he says that Mary Magdalene, out of whom was cast 7 demons. So, not very many references in the Gospels. The one that Dan Brown really picks up on, I don't know whether I'll be able to find the right place. I've got so many pages turned down and post-it notes stuck in here that actually I can't find anything anymore. It's probably not worth the time of trying to find it. He talks about the Gospel of Philip, and he quotes a little bit from the Gospel of Philip about Mary was the companion of the Lord. Oh, here he is. The Gospel of Philip, Teabing says, is always a good place to start. It's one of these Gnostic Gospels. I'll come back to that in a second. The companion of the Saviour is Mary Magdalene. Christ loved her more than all the disciples and used to kiss her often on the mouth. The rest of the disciples were offended by it and expressed disapproval. They said to him, "Why do you love her more than all of us?" So the word surprised Sophie, and yet they hardly seemed conclusive. It says nothing of marriage. Au contraire, Teabing smiled, pointing to the first line. As any Aramaic scholar will tell you, the word companion in those days literally meant spouse. Well, there's a number of problems with that. Firstly, the Gospel of Philip wasn't written in Aramaic. It was written in Coptic, translated out of Greek. The word for companion is a loan word from the Greek. It's koinonos, which means friend. Companion never means spouse. So there's a couple of problems already. Third problem is that the Gospel of Philip dates from late second century AD. So it's a much later source than the biblical Gospels, which date from the 50s or 60s AD. So within two to three decades of Jesus' death, the Gospels that we have, or at least Matthew, Mark and Luke, were written. And John was just a little bit later. Philip is 150 years later than that. The next problem is that Dan Brown has filled in a number of gaps, because the Coptic Gospels, those are the Coptic Gospels. He describes them as scrolls. You can see those aren't scrolls, they're codices. Dan Brown, he makes so many mistakes, which is a real shame. If he didn't make so many mistakes, he could make his points a lot more effectively. But, okay, so these are the Nag Hammadi Gnostic codices that were found in Egypt in 1945. A little Egyptian peasant boy by the memorable name of Muhammad Ali found this clay pot, was rather worried that there might be a djinn in it, but also thought that there was probably some treasure, some antiquities that he could sell. So eventually he overcame his fear, cracked it open, and he says there was a djinn in it. This big golden thing came up in the air, which is actually probably the dust of these things that have disintegrated over 1700 years nearly. And they're pretty good, but they're also got full of holes. And this particular bit that they're quoting from here is a bit with several holes where the manuscript has just worn away. And in fact, it says Christ loved her something than all the Christ loved her something all the disciples, and used to kiss her blank on blank. The rest of the disciples blank expressed disapproval. So actually, Dan Brown has put in lots of detail there. He used to kiss her often. He used to kiss her on the mouth, and the other disciples were offended. So those are three things that he's put into holes in the manuscripts. Now, even if Jesus did kiss her on the mouth, it means nothing, because for the Gnostics, a kiss, as the kiss of fellowship in the New Testament, was an expression of not necessarily of romantic sexual love at all, but of fellowship. And for the Gnostics in particular, it was a way of imparting gnosis, the secret knowledge that you were supposed to get. So regardless of where Jesus kissed her, that would be what was in mind for Philip. But Dan Brown has put in all kinds of stuff. So he takes the fanciful ideas of Margaret Starbird, the completely unjustified ideas of Lee and Bajant and Lincoln, the half-baked ideas of Pickles and Price, and then fills in lots of gaps and blanks to concoct something of his own. The evidence is pathetic, quite frankly, for this. So there is no good evidence. However, on the other hand, it actually doesn't matter anyway. He makes a big deal of it. But so what if Jesus was married? You know, the Christian conviction is that Jesus is fully God and fully man. And because he's fully man, every emotion, every aspect of his physical being is right and justified. Christianity is not an anti-sex religion that Dan Brown tries to make out. It has been at times. It still is. But it shouldn't be. That's not inherent in the Bible. The Song of Solomon in the Old Testament is a celebration of erotic love. So it wouldn't matter at all if Jesus was married, because that would just be an expression of his humanity. It wouldn't matter if he'd had a child. It would just be an expression of his humanity. The fact is, there isn't any evidence for it. But so what? The so what for Dan Brown is, of course, because Margaret Starbird says that Mary Magdalene is the goddess. That's why he's jumped onto this, because for her, she's the expression of the goddess. There are all sorts of problems with that, as we've seen. Sorry, long answer to a short question. Sorry, I'll try and answer a bit more briefly. Any more questions?